issue is a reflection on self-esteem in our children or self-esteem in ourselves, which we're going to touch on briefly because they're actually integrally connected. Okay, we're going to start. People will be coming in. I apologize. I do not have enough handouts. I will make sure that the OU has a copy of it. And anybody who wants a handout after the, you know, after the conference is over will be able to contact the OU and they will have the handouts. Okay, since there are sticklers for time, Baruch Hashem, let's get started, so we'll be able to end on time as well. For those of you who have the handouts, we're going to be basically going down, and I'll be expanding on points. For those of you who don't, do not worry, I will be reading, the handouts are not massive things, they're one-liners, which mean more to me than they do to you at this moment. Okay, first of all, first question is, topic, how to help our children develop and maintain positive self-esteem. So the first question is, what is self-esteem? Okay, everybody talks about self-esteem. What is it? How do you get it? Can you buy it in a store? Can you bribe somebody to give it to them? Like, what is self-esteem? And then the second question, which is really very important, is there a difference between self-esteem and self-worth? And so this is a chiluk, a little bit of a difference that I think that, let's put it this way, I don't think I saw it anywhere. It may be in the book somewhere, but this is something that over the years that I've thought about and I've been lecturing about this, I think there is a difference. Self-worth is what each human being has or should have because they're a human being with a godly soul and they're here as a human being with a, you know, as a God-given mission and they're a unique character. Meaning self-worth is something which should be unconditional in all people at all times. Especially, I'm not sure how the non-Jews work it, but especially a Jew who knows that they're a Ben or a Bas Melech, there should be absolutely no issue of self-worth, meaning I am unconditionally a worthwhile person. In terms of your children, okay, how does a parent communicate to a child unconditional self-worth? Well, it starts out real easy, okay, because God gave babies chayin. And made them very, very lovable and made it easy for them, you know, for us to cuddle them and to hug and kiss them and, you know, do all those things. But really what has to happen is that emotion that we have when we come up after a day's work or home after a day's work, we've been separated from our toddler for a little while and we light up and we open up our arms and the toddler hopefully either runs away or runs to you depending what stage they're at developmentally. But you light up when you see them. That's the response that you need to have when your child is 8 and 10 and 12, and 15, and 17. And it gets much harder to light up when your child is 14 or 17 than it is when you have an 18-month-old or a 2.5-year-old. But the self-worth that you need to communicate to your child is, regardless of what you do, regardless of what your accomplishments are, I love you. You are an extremely important person in my life. You're one of the most important people in my life. And that will never, ever change. And that's self-worth. A child needs to grow up knowing, regardless of whether they're an A student or they struggle in school, whether they're learning disabled, whether they're similar to their parents, whether they're different than their parents, whether they're at risk, not at risk, whatever terms you want to throw together, that basically that they are somebody that they loved and they will, and that's immutable and immovable basically. That's self-worth. The sense that I am a worthwhile human being just because. End of sentence. I know it's not proper grammar to end a sentence with because or to start it with, but that's the end of the sentence. I'm worthwhile, I'm loved, I'm unique, just because. And it's extremely, in order for self-esteem, by the way, self-esteem builds on self-worth. I don't believe a child can have positive self-esteem unless they first have a sense of their own self-worth. They first have a sense of who they are and what their chashivas is, what their importance is, of the fact that they are loved regardless of anything and everything. And again, it's easy to do when they're little and you have to keep doing it. You know, I know at some point it becomes very difficult for parents to tell their children that you love them. It's easy when they're little, okay? When they're 7 or 8 and they're going through one stage, and then when they're 10 or 11 and they're becoming teenagers, and then when they're full-fledged teenagers, when they're 16 or 17, it's not so simple to tell a child sometimes that you love them, because sometimes what you really want to do is what you want to wring their necks. But wringing their necks and loving them should have nothing to do with one another, okay? You can temporarily, for a long time, dislike your child, wish they were different, wish you could sell them or give them away, or pay somebody to take them away, and you can still love them, and you need to still love them, and that has to be communicated completely unconditionally. Okay, let's go from there to self-esteem. Self-esteem is built on self-worth, okay? Self-esteem basically is the idea that, I'm going to talk about in the eye, that I am worthwhile because I can accomplish, I can achieve, I can do the things that I am supposed to do developmentally at every stage of my life. Let me give you examples, okay? Sorry about that, one second. Self-esteem is based on an appraisal of oneself, okay? The important parts of self-esteem have to do with the ability to strive, to work hard, to aim for a goal, and to achieve. Now, this does not mean that your child needs to be an A-plus student to have self-esteem. Not at all. It's not so much in the results. It depends how you as a parent treat it, obviously. But if your child is striving for something, and let's talk about it at the younger ages, because it's so much easier, okay? A child who's starting to walk, okay? It's one of the most delicious things, one of the most miraculous things to watch. They get up on their feet. First they stand, right? Then until they learn how to plop down, it takes a little while. They stand in their cribs and they scream because they can't sit down by themselves. But once they learn to sit down, so they take a step and you make, yay, and everybody gets so excited and they plop down. And what do? They get up and they go a step or two and they plop down and you make yay and they go up. Okay. So what is that child basically getting a sense of? Well, that walking is a good thing and that mommy's proud of them. Tati's proud of them. Your brothers and sisters are proud of them. That's the beginnings of self-esteem, meaning I accomplish an appropriate developmental milestone, and therefore I feel good about myself. Now, if you were to, I say appropriate developmental milestone, because if you were to make yay when your 10-year-old gets off the chair and walks, a healthy 10-year-old who walks all over the place and runs all over the place, and you say, yay, you walked! The 10-year-old would say she's lost her marbles. You know, like, what's this about? So is developmentally appropriate milestones. The same thing with toilet training, which is a very easy one, okay? You start toilet training whether you believe at 18 months or 2 years or 2.5 years or 3 years. I'm not discussing the time appropriateness for toilet training. But whenever you're beginning to toilet train, okay, so you get the child to sit in the potty or on the toilet, and first you just applaud them for sitting there, and then they get their little chocolate bits if they actually do something, and you make yay, and you make a big deal, and the child feels like $1 million, and you buy them their special underwear, whether it's, I don't know what's on the underwear these days. You know, it used to be the cartoon characters, Spider-Man and, I don't know, Cinderella, what do I know? I get SpongeBob SquarePants. It must be, on, I don't even know who they are, but that must be on the underwear today. You know, and so you get a special underwear and it's all very, very exciting. And the child, when you see them, you see that they're puffed up and they're very proud of themselves, and they'll actually show their underwear to anybody who comes into the house, whether you want them to or not, because they're very proud. What would happen if you made yay for an 11-year-old? Who went to the bathroom by themselves, okay? Wouldn't be good. So part of the deal in terms of self-esteem is giving appropriate positive feedback and for the child to internalize that feedback for appropriate developmental stages. Now, the question becomes, children spend a good deal of their lives really away from you. They're in school. They're in camp. Hopefully they're with friends. What happens if they're not great, they're not good in school? And many of our children are not. Not everybody can be a genius. Not everybody can do a work. Not everybody can sit and learn for hours upon end. How does a child get self-esteem? So as far as I'm concerned, the issue of self-esteem is both incumbent on teachers and on parents, primarily on parents. Meaning if you basically accept your child and love them and help them work out what their strengths are. There is no child in the world, there is no human being in the world does not have God-given talents, okay? Our school system, I think more for the boys than for the girls actually, isn't necessarily designed to bring out talents that are not classroom-based. The girls, it's a little bit easier. For the boys, there's also sports, but then it's up to the parent. And I know there's not a lot of time after school or on Sundays or on Shabbos, but it is up to you. And I'm not talking about detective work where you have to look with a fine microscope. You know your children, okay? They all have milus. Yes, they all have chisronos. But it's up to you to help them to know their own chisronos, to know their own talents, to know what they're good at, to give them opportunities to develop that, whether it's a hobby, whether it's, again, playing Casio, whether it's art, whether it's socially they're gifted and they happen to be born leaders or they just do really well, they're balei midos and balei chesed, they do good kindness for other people and they get along well with peers and they're good to older people. These are tremendous things for self-esteem to be based on. And as I said to many parents, even the last week recently, remind yourselves and your children that school lasts for, God willing, you know, for the ones who are not academically inclined, for 12 years, and that's it. They've got the rest of their lives to live, okay? So whether or not they failed trigonometry or geometry or whatever they call the new math, math A, B, and C, okay, as far as I'm concerned, is useless, except that it can damage their self-esteem unless the parent and teacher are alert and basically say, listen, you don't have a math head? That's God-given. Do what you can. Try to pass. If you don't pass, we'll work something else at. But let's focus on what you're good at, okay? And I've challenged kids who have had in my office who felt that they were no good for anything and their self-esteem was lousy, et cetera, et cetera. Take one subject, just one subject they liked best, and to put some effort in, okay? And you focus on that one subject, so a child begins to feel a sense of, I'm striving, I'm working, and it almost always pays off, okay? As long as they're not split too much. That doesn't mean they're going to get, you know, A's. It may be this child is going to get a 75 or an 80, whereas beforehand they were getting, I don't know, 50s and 40s and 10s and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Self-esteem is based on the working hard for something, hopefully accomplishing it, but more importantly, having the important people in their lives, namely their parents and, yes, their teachers as well, acknowledge that hard work, to encourage that hard work, and to help the child find their strengths. Okay, school for many is a self-esteem booster. Thank you, I have. And for other people, it unfortunately takes a three-year-old who thinks that they are beautiful, strong, and, you know, wonderful, and the apples of everybody's eye, and it knocks them down. It's your job as parents, and it's a big job, but it's one of the, it's, I don't know how to say it. It's probably the most important thing you can do for their parents, for your children. Because if they don't have self-esteem, they're not going to feel good about themselves. They're not going to feel good about their Yiddishkeit. They're not going to feel they can accomplish in the world. They're not going to feel good about their relationships. And again, school lasts for 12 years. It may seem like forever to you and to your children, but it's a really relatively short period in a child's life. And so you need to keep in mind that self-esteem basically is dependent on the ability to strive, to work hard, and to reach for something which may be just a drop above where they are, and to push and to push and to push. Hard work is part of self-esteem in some ways, okay? If things come too easily, and I've seen this with children who, to whom school, let's say, comes really easily, they don't get anything really about getting the A. They didn't work for it. It doesn't make them feel good. I mean, so what? I'm smart. They know on some level God gave them that gift. They didn't crack a book for the test. That's going to give them self-esteem? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And when you say, great job, they're thinking, you know, I guess my parents think I'm a dum-dum, you know, because they're complimenting something that I didn't do anything for. So that's a different issue in terms of how to compliment. But you need to take something which is not so easy for your children. They should do well, of course, and you want to compliment for doing well. But it's the work, it's the effort that becomes part of self-esteem. It's basically, to put it in one sentence, it's a sense of self-efficacy, of living up to their own unique potential. And it's up to you as parents to get to know your children in terms of what their potential is. And it varies from child to child to child within the same family, obviously. Okay. Number two. I mean, this I can continue to talk about. We'll get back to it as we go through things. Number two. Just as joy and happiness are contagious, and I think we all know that, that if somebody walks into a room like full of goodwill and smiley and just in a good mood, the chances are good they can uplift a lot of people around them. Just the same way if somebody's in a rotten mood and they come in and they make lousy comments, all of a sudden, you know, people begin to question, well, maybe I wasn't feeling as happy as I thought I was, and moods are contagious, we know that. So is positive self-esteem contagious. Now, this puts a tremendous burden on you guys. Okay, and I think, again, Rabbi Twersky will talk about this, I'm sure, in his keynote, because it's one of his pet peeves of our generation, is that if our parents don't have self-esteem, how do we expect our children to have self-esteem? And so as a parent, as far as I'm concerned, as one of your chiyuvim, one of your obligations as a parent, to develop your own sense of positive self-esteem, okay? How do you do that? The same way you would in a child. You look for your own talents, you work at them, you work on being a better mother, a better father, a better spouse. You set yourself small goals. And according to Rav Yitzchak Kurzon Zatzal, quoting from, I think, Rav Nachman Mibreslov, that a person should spend 95% of their time looking at what's right with them, and only 5% at what's wrong with them. I've heard that statistic actually even differently, that when a person basically needs to do tshuva, they should still spend about 98% of their time feeling good about themselves and 2% looking at the things they need to correct. There's no room in Yiddishkeit for lousy self-esteem. It's an excuse. It's either a yetzahara or it's a depression, or you want to call them one and the same. It doesn't matter. If you, as a parent, are wishy-washy about yourself, there is no way in the world that your children can have positive self-esteem. And I hate to say that so bluntly, but I see it over and over and over again. If you feel good about yourself, whether it's as a parent... Okay. Excuse me one second, let's see if we can do this better. Awful noises. Okay. If you as a parent do not feel competent and capable in whatever areas of your life you need to feel competent and capable in, your children will not, they pick that up. Children sense so much of what goes on inside of us that we don't express, so we think we're hiding from them. I go over this with parents over and over again in my office. You know, you think your children don't know about the Shalom Bias issues, or you think your children don't know about the financial pressures, or you think your children don't know that one of your parents, you know, God forbid, is sick. They know. And by leaving it as a something that they, if you think they don't know, they have all sorts of fantasies about what's wrong and what's really going on. The unknown is always scarier, okay? Let's get back to self-esteem. Your job as a parent, okay, is to make sure that you feel good enough about yourself and that you have a clear recognition of what your strong points are. And yes, what your weaknesses are, what needs to be worked at, so that you can go through the day feeling like I'm working at my tachlis, I'm working towards a goal, I'm okay with what I'm where I'm at, but I need to improve, that's okay. And your child will sense that and pick that up. If, again, to repeat it, and it's so important, if you feel like you're a failure, okay, if you feel like you don't know what you're doing, if you have wishy-washy sense of who you are and your own self-worth, whether it's because of past issues or current issues, we all have issues, okay? If that's how you relate to your children, even if you don't realize it, they will pick it up, and your child cannot have a positive sense of self-esteem if their parents do not, because it's contagious. They will feel what's going on in you underneath, and that is much more important than any words you say. So that is your job number one in terms of this workshop, is to get working on your sense of self and make sure that you're very clear about what your strengths are and that you can be proud of yourself as a human being, understanding that we all have things to work on. That's how God created us. The fact that, you know, person A has too much of a temper, and person B is a little bit too aggressive, and person C is a little bit too shy. These are God-given natures. They're not things to be embarrassed about or have poor self-esteem about. And this is one of the things you need to communicate to your children also. But as a parent, you have to believe that first. And you have to believe it and communicate it in your actions and in terms of what's going on underneath you. Okay. Each of these I could go on and on about, but let's go through some more points. How do you help a child learn that they are worthy, that they have self-esteem, they should have self-esteem, they should feel good and positive about themselves? There's actually, in some ways, other than the things I just talked about, it's a couple of simple basic ingredients. Respect your children. Children are people. One of Rabbi Twersky's jokes, I don't know if he's going to repeat it today, he's not here now, so if he does repeat it, laugh again anyway. It's from one of his books, okay? And it's one, I don't know if it actually ever happened, but it could happen. Two parents and their three-year-old son went out to a restaurant, okay? Waitress came, took the father's order, took the mother's order, and then turned to the three-year-old and asked what he would like. And he said, I'd like two hot dogs on a bun with lots of mustard, lots of sauerkraut, and a big glass of Coke, please. And the waitress said, write it all down, no problem. Mother says, he'll have roast beef with mashed potatoes and peas on the side and a glass of milk. Waitress nods, walks away. She comes back a few minutes later and gives out the things and gives the son, gives the little boy, his two francs with lots of mustard and sauerkraut. And the boy looks at his mother and says to her, look, Ma, she thinks I'm real. Okay? It's a joke, but it's not funny. Our children need to know. I think we get caught up, especially when you have a busy household, okay? And many Jewish families, Baruch Hashem, have kanayinah, lots of children. Our children are human beings, and if we had the time, and we need to make the time, there's one workshop going upstairs, I think, is how to create that time. I was going to go to that one. How do you create time when there is none? To appreciate who your child is as a human being. To show respect for your child as a person. Because even though they have milos and chesronos, and depending on their age, sometimes the chesronos sort of stare you in the face, and it seems to be all you see, that's not who they are, that's not what they are. They're a human being that has strengths and weaknesses. And you need to respect them as their own people, their own style, their own way. That sense of respect that you can convey to your child is worth, it's priceless, let's put it that way. Listen. Listening is a skill that it's hard to come by in the 21st century, right. It wasn't any easier in the 20th century, by the way, I don't think. Certainly not since I've been alive. I think that's why people pay therapists to listen, because not too many other people in their lives are just sort of able to listen. Listen to your child. Listening to your child means that your child comes home and drops his coat on the floor for the umpteenth time, you know, slams the door, announces they're never going back to school again, or, you know, or I'm not doing my homework, or my teacher is really stupid, or any number of things that children announce when they come home from school, depending on their age. Instead of immediately saying, how many times have I told you to pick your coat up, and don't slam the door, and you are going back to school tomorrow. Okay, it's a great way to start an evening, right? It's a great way. How many of us do that? Okay. Wait a few minutes and say, you seem a little bit upset. Want to talk? No. Slam the door. Okay. Typically, the answer will be no beyond, I don't know, age 8, I would say. Up till 5, 6, kids will still talk to their parents. Beyond that, teenagership starts much earlier these days. And I'm really, no joke, forgetting about puberty hitting earlier, the teenage personality starts by 8 or 9. I mean, I hear it over and over and over again. Eventually, your child will talk, if you really want to listen. Listening doesn't mean, what do you mean you were chutzpahdik to the teacher? Of course she threw you out of class. Listening means, ooh, you had a really rough day, didn't you? You know, and they're going to carry on, and they're going to carry on. And there is an appropriate time to mechanech them about chutzpah, but not when you're listening to them. You can't listen and give musar at the same time, because I don't know about you, but I have an automatic shut-off switch. You know, when somebody is supposedly listening to me, but really they're telling me how they think I should be, the switch goes bing, goes on to off, okay? And I'm an adult, supposedly, okay? So you think about our children, the cut-off switch is immediate. You begin to saying, well, you should, or you didn't, or why did you? Cut-off switch is gone. You've lost them. Listen. Listen to your children. They have what to say. They need a listening ear. And just by your listening and validating, you are giving them the most tremendous gift in the world. You don't have to have answers. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't necessarily have answers unless they specifically ask you, Ma, Ta, what do you think I should do? In which case, problem solve with them. That's a different workshop, okay? But listen. Just listen to them. Validate. Now, I want to make a point to you, which I don't know. I don't think it's on my thing here. But I went a little bit stream of consciousness. And this is an important point for all parents to know. And I go over it and over and over it in both of my own mind and with parents that I see. Validating somebody's feelings or somebody's perception of what happened is not the same as saying that they're right and it was okay. Let's take an example, okay? I'll try not to make it too personal, but it happened in my home last week, okay? Child comes home, and first you don't know what's wrong because they're slamming doors and playing music too loud and yelling, leave me alone, I'm never going back to school again. Never happens in anybody else's house, I know, you know? And thank God I was working because I probably would have done the wrong thing otherwise. But I couldn't do the wrong thing because I wasn't around. So when I come back from my office, which thank God is downstairs, and I come upstairs, and this particular child is sitting and eating pizza. And I had absolutely no idea what had gone on, whether my husband had spoken to him or not. I hadn't a clue what had happened, why he'd come home 3 hours early from school. And I said, where are your glasses? It was an innocent question. They're in school. How come they're in school? You always bring them home. Well, they got knocked off when the kid made my nose bloody. Huh. Why the kid made your nose bloody? Because we were fighting. What were you fighting about? Well, he took my can of soda and shook it up, and I got really angry, and, you know, I did something, and then, you know, he punched me really hard. I was, like, really all bloody. I said, oh, sounds like a horrible day. Like, what, you know, wasn't there anybody around? Rebbe was there. He didn't care. You know, I'm not going back to the school tomorrow. I'm going back to my old school. Yeah, you don't want to go back to school tomorrow. No, I don't go back to school tomorrow. I said, you have to get your glasses at some point. So I'll get my glasses. I don't care. I'm not going back to school tomorrow. I said, what happened to the other kid? He said, well, I got in a few good punches. I said, well, I'm glad to hear that. At least wasn't one-sided. You know, and that was basically the end of the conversation. Okay. What was I supposed to say? You know, I spoke to the principal afterwards. My son wasn't an angel. Okay. The other kid completely went berserk, unfortunately. The truth was, I was glad that my son, who, Baruch Hashem, is not a lemical. I wasn't worried about his sitting back and being kicked and punched, okay? But the truth is, if he's going to get hurt, I don't want him to sit there and take it, okay? And he knows I don't want him fighting, his general rule. It's not like I had to remind him. Do you think a child doesn't know that fighting isn't a good thing? You know, or that blooding another kid's nose is probably not what, you know, we aspire to? Do you think a child needs reminding of that? No. I need to remind him of that. He knows that. So he didn't feel judged. We asked him straight because he said, you guys interfere too much. So I said to him, do you want us to call the teacher or the principal, or should we wait a few days? Do what you want. That's already a yes. You know, so you have to interpret your child's language, you know. And I made it clear that, my husband and I both made it clear, we weren't happy that he'd been in a fight, but I wasn't angry with him. Fights happen, okay? He's not an 8-year-old. He's bigger than that, okay? And that... What should I say? We didn't discuss his going back to school the next day. He got off to school the next day and went back. You know, the scene could have happened so differently. So differently. And it does. I mean, please don't get me wrong. I do this wrong all the time. I mean, you got into a fight. You know how worked we've hard with you, how hard we've worked with you not to fight? What do you mean you got into a fight? You hit the other kid? How could you do that? You're in a brand new school. You're going to get thrown out. What are they going to think? You know, the conversation so easily could have gone that way. And I won't have communicated anything new to my child, okay, because they know that they're not supposed to be fighting, other than, what should I say? I can't tell them anything, you know? They don't listen anyway. They don't bother. They don't want to hear what I have to say. They don't want to hear about my day. And we do it all the time, whether it's about a math test, or whether it's about something that happened at recess. And we do it with our 7, 8-year-olds. What do you mean you didn't share a snack? Don't you know how important sharing is? Of course they know how important sharing is by 7 or 8 years old. They don't even need them to tell you that. Ask what happened. Listen to them. If there's a problem that needs to be solved, 90% of the time, and I'm making up that number, by the way, but I think it's close enough, the child can solve it by your listening and empathizing, okay? The other 10%, they may need some help, either by your problem solving with them, and there are times when it's completely appropriate to call a teacher or principal. My child's a teenager. You better believe I called the principal. My child comes home and tells me his nose was bloody, his glasses were knocked off the face, and nobody seemed to do anything about it. You better believe I was going to call a principal. I don't care how old he is. Okay? And we did. We found out what happened. Blah, 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 blah. I was taken care of, and he went back to school the next day. Listening to your children. You can't help a child feel good about themselves if you can't stop yourself from interrupting them and giving them mussar. It doesn't work. You have to be able to listen. And listening to them doesn't mean you agree with them. I hate my teacher. How many times have I told you not to use the word hate? Well, that's going to really get the conversation a lot further going, isn't it? You know? No, of course you don't want to use it. So change the word. You're really super angry with your teacher. No, I told her I hate my teacher. Well, I guess you've got really, really strong feelings about your teacher. Doesn't mean you're okay with them hating their teacher. They don't know what hate is, most of these kids, younger kids. It's a word they pick up, you know? Or they're even using the word hate. But you model afterwards, not at the moment. You listen, 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 listen. I can't tell you how many relationships that I've dealt with have been changed around just by parents learning to hold themselves back from that criticism and from that mussar and just listening. But they're reminding themselves what I've told them. Your kids know what's right and what's wrong. They don't need you to tell them at this point. And we're not talking about a new behavior like it's your child's 12 and you've never told them it's not okay to hurt somebody else. They know that. They know that from nursery school. Listen, listen, listen. Validate. And don't be afraid that you're validating is giving your children a message that you think that they're right. Saying to them, gosh, that sounds like it was a horrible day in school, doesn't mean that you're happy they had a fight. Or saying you got a 64 on a test, you must feel so lousy, you missed passing by that one point, doesn't mean that you're okay with them getting a 64 when you think they should have been able to get an 85. That's a discussion for later. There's a time to sit down with your child and say you got a 64 on a test. I know, and you know, you could have done better. What needs to happen differently? But not at that moment. That moment you need to listen, okay? You know, It's not a joke. It's something which actually happens, but it's actually a joke. And the men in the audience will please forgive me. It's a male-female joke, okay? And I'm not putting anybody down. It's just a typical interaction. And it happens with our kids also, but not so clear. Husband and wife spend all day together, shopping, running errands, running around, you know, in and out of the car, in and out of the car, in a store, pick out this, go over that, et cetera. Wife comes home at the end of the day and says, gosh, you know, we never get to spend any time together anymore. And husband says, what are you talking about? We just spent the whole day together. Okay, and the wife says, but we didn't get a chance to talk. And the husband, if he's been married less than 2 years, is completely and totally bewildered. If he's married more than that, hopefully he's learned, he's been trained by his wife, that spending time together doesn't mean we run in and out of errands. It means that we sit and we talk, okay? You need to sit and talk to your children, okay? And it's with your children it can be while you're shopping, okay? With your children, it can be in the car. As a matter of fact, doing things with your children, whether it's cooking, baking, or shopping, is a great time to talk to them, because kids will talk to you about things that they can't talk to you about otherwise when there's no eye contact. You can't necessarily have a face-to-face discussion with your child without them squirming and saying, are we done yet? Can I play Game Boy? It's my computer time now, you know. But if you're shopping, you know, you're going out, I don't care what it's for. It can be for frozen pizza, you know. It doesn't have to be, you know, they'll talk to you more. Okay, let's go on. Another common mistake, I should have put down this as the common myths of building self-esteem. You will not give your child self-esteem by allowing them to do whatever they want to do. You will create a child who thinks that the world is a very scary place, and if their parents aren't in control, my gosh, who is? Children need rules and boundaries, okay? Now, the parentheses in this sentence, for those of you who don't have the handout, says, discipline can and should be done matter-of-factly and with kindness. This is where we get confused, okay? Disciplining and setting boundaries doesn't involve shouting. Issue all along, okay? But you can talk matter-of-factly to your 12-month-old, but it's not going to make much of a difference. By the time they're 4 or 5, if you've been yelling nonstop, they tune you out. They literally tune you out by that age. So if you're a screamer by nature, and some of us are screamers by nature, we grew up with it, that's our nature, you need to work on talking softly. It's so much more effective in terms of discipline to talk in a lower voice than it is to yell. If you don't yell, as a general rule, and then you yell once in a blue moon because something has really riled you up and you think a point has to be made, believe me, your child will take you seriously, okay? But if you yell all the time, discipline, a child did something wrong and you feel a consequence. I don't like the word punishment, but a consequence is appropriate. Okay, so listen, we made a deal, you know, that if you get up for school late again, that you lose your computer time tonight. So I'm sorry, but there's no computer time tonight. It's not a fight, it's not a yell, it's not a musa schmooze, it's just a matter of fact. Your child may argue with you, okay, and you can say, I'm sorry, this is the rules we made up, we discussed this already. You know, tomorrow night you'll have another chance. Kids are so much more likely to accept that matter-of-fact tone of voice than, how many times have I told you, this is what's going to happen, I'm taking it, if you argue with me, you're going to lose it for a year, I'm throwing the computer out the window, you know, all sorts of threats. I've had parents come in to say, I think I overreacted, I grounded my daughter for a year, you know, well, not so much, didn't react so much, it wasn't, you know, just a little bit of an overreaction, you know. The more matter-of-fact and the less emotional you can be about disciplining, the more your children will listen and the safer they will feel. However, do not think, regardless of the age, that children don't need boundaries and don't need rules. Teenagers will tell you, I can run my own life. I don't need you anymore. Stop telling me what to do. Well, don't tell your teenagers what to do, but make sure the rules are in place in terms of whether it's phone time or internet or whether it's curfews or whether, you know, them going out with their friends and you're knowing where they are. The rules have to change, by the way. The rules that apply to a 7-year-old should not apply to a 13-year-old, okay? It doesn't work. Your rules have to change, but there have to be rules and boundaries. Dr. Ron Taffel, who's published a number of books, I have to get his new book. He has a book called Nurturing Good Children Now, which is a phenomenal book. The book is basically about how to protect our children from the influences of what he calls the second family. It applies just as much to from Jews as it does to every other audience out there. It could have been written for from Jews. He's actually a affiliated conservative Jew who lives in Manhattan and knows the from Olam relatively well. It's called Nurturing Good Children Now, Taffel, T-A-F-F-E-L. He has another book out now, which I have to get, which is, you know, doing therapy with a new adolescent because adolescents have changed. We all know that. And I'm sure what he says has to do with our community as well, even though it's not
specifically written for our community. What was I telling you about? Why did I tell you about Ron Tafel? I'm sorry, did you just... Setting boundaries and rules. He has done interviews of hundreds of children that he's seen, but also cross country for his research. And one of the things children told him consistently is, you know, they want their children, their parents, to set rules. They want their parents to know where they are and what they're doing. They may never admit this to you, okay? But when they're being candid with somebody else, they will tell you that the world is a very frightening place if there's nobody in charge. So if you guys aren't in charge, then basically nobody is. Are there things that you need to give freedom along the way? And again, it's a completely separate talk in terms of how much freedom, how do you give it over time, what age, what level of responsibility, obviously a separate talk. But there's no child who does not need rules and boundaries. Again, don't confuse that with yelling and screaming at them. That's all. They're two separate things. Okay. The importance of hard work and accomplishment I spoke about a little bit in terms of the whole idea of self-esteem. Self-esteem is not something that you gain by snapping a finger. It's not self-worth. Self-worth is that innate sense of being loved that you communicate to your child throughout their lives. Self-esteem you can't give to your child. You can model it. You can help them get it by pointing out strengths and building on them. You can encourage hard work. And when a child says, I don't want to do this, it's too hard, you tell them, you know, you break it down to bite-sized pieces and you say, if you can do this, I guarantee you you'll feel good about yourself, okay? Don't set them up for failure. It's bite-sized pieces that you're doing. Okay. Positive thinking can be taught. Now, this may seem like a non sequitur in terms of what we're talking about, but it's not. Many of us and many of our children have black and white thinking. I'll never get it right. You know, I'll always fail. The kids will never like me. I don't have any friends. You know, what I do is never enough for you at home. The nevers and the shoulds and all those things. We're guilty of it ourselves. If you examine your own thoughts, we're very guilty of it ourselves. You can train your children, after, of course, you've trained yourselves, to think more positively. So you had a fight with a friend today. Tomorrow you'll go back to school and either you'll find another friend or you'll be able to make up. One or the other, hopefully. You'll never pass a test. You never pass a test. You pass, you know, a bunch of tests this year. You may feel like you never pass a test. Again, validating, but saying there's never think talk makes you feel down. I mean, we know this in terms of cognitive therapy, in terms of depression and anxiety. I'll always be depressed is going to intensify a depression. Or this anxiety is killing me. I can't live with it. Will intensify anxiety rather than this feels really awful, but it's going to end soon. I know it ends because I've had it before. It'll end. The power of positive thinking in terms of self-esteem is tremendous. If you can help your children, of course, by first believing it yourself, that they are worthwhile human beings, they have talents, they have things to give to the world, they have a unique mission here. And no, they may not feel it at the moment. They may feel like, I don't want to go back to school again, or I'm not going to camp, nobody likes me. I can't play basketball, I'm not going to camp again. You know, and these are real dilemmas for children. You know, don't minimize them. But if you can teach them the power of positive thought of, okay, you're not the best player in basketball. I hear that. I'm not going to, let's not fool ourselves, okay? You're not, you know, you're 5 feet, all your peers are 6'2", and you can't run very well, so you're not the best player in basketball. But there are things you are good at. Can we focus on those instead? Yeah, but then you're playing basketball tomorrow. Okay, so playing basketball tomorrow, you know what? You're probably not going to be a great player by tomorrow. Does that mean that you're worthless? Sure it does. Well, no, it doesn't. You know, sort of combating that negative think talk with something which is much more realistic of, no, so you're not a great basketball player. You have other milas. You have things to give. Your friends come here and they love hanging out with you because of your personality. Or, you know, your brain works, you know, you have the most creative brain. Or, you know, you're known in your class for being kind and generous or whatever it is. I'll tell you a story, and I'm going to deliberately leave it as impersonal as possible. We're talking about a child who has learning disabilities, okay, does not do particularly well in school, is coming from a relatively dysfunctional home, which means that their self-esteem is already, you know, starting at a low level, has been thrown out of a number of schools. What should I say? It's had a really rough time, rougher than children should have, but unfortunately it's not that common. I saw this child in action with a handicapped child, a genuinely handicapped child, and it made me cry, quite literally. Because the goodness and the sensitivity that this child who's been thrown out of schools, okay, doesn't learn particularly well, and has got numerous other problems, showed toward this handicapped child was so overwhelming to me that I had to walk away because I was crying. Now, does this child know about their own strength? No. And even if I were to tell them, they wouldn't necessarily believe it. But it's there. Children can have many chesronos. Some of them have wonderful, wonderful hearts, and it takes an incident like that to bring it out. It doesn't mean that other times they're not going to smash who knows what. But that says something about what a good neshama they are, and they need to learn about it themselves, and the only person who's going to teach them is you. Over time. You want to know what your strengths you have? You want to know what's good about you? And you have to have that list ready in your head of this is what's right, and this is what's right, and this is what's right, and this is what's right. And, you know, it doesn't matter, I can't play basketball. You know, well, listen, you got to school, there's not going to be too much time for basketball playing, you know. So I know it's important now, and I know that it hurts that you can't play ball. And you can focus on that if you'd like. That's your choice. You can focus on not being able to play ball, or you can focus on some of the things that really are right with you. Okay. I'm going to skip down a little bit, and then we'll go back to some of the stuff. I'm going to go to number 10 on here. There's a comma missing, okay? Number 10 says, the importance of reframing humor. That's not what it means, by the way. The importance of reframing, comma, humor, comma, and not personalizing. Let's talk about what reframing is, okay? Reframing is a therapeutic technique which parents, we all do it. We just don't know that it's called reframing, okay? Reframing is when your child comes home, let's see, what's a good example of reframing, and says, I'll give you an example that just happened. Shabbos was awful. This happened first, this happened second, this happened third, this happened fourth, this happened fifth, okay? You have to empathize and validate, certainly. You can't say, no, Shabbos was great, you're wrong, that's ridiculous. But you can reframe and say, well, listen, it sounds like Shabbos was really, really awful. You handled that really, really, really pretty well. Look how much strength you have. You're still standing here, you're still talking to me. Find the positive, reframe it. Your child comes home and says, I'll give you an example from my office, just easier for me to think. You take a typical ADHD child, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, okay? I have a very strong clinical measure for these children, okay? It's almost foolproof. If after 5 minutes in my office I have a headache, the chances are good the child is ADHD, okay? Because they're in non-stop motion, and I'm asking them, please don't touch that, get your hands out of my drawer, no, don't do that, you know, it's a wonderful therapeutic technique, right? And the parents come and say, I don't do with this child. They touch everything. They open everything. Things that they're not supposed to be, okay? And there's right. There's an absence of inhibition and limit setting and all those things a child needs. But if you want to help the parent reframe, you can say, my gosh, your child is incredibly curious. Yes, they do need to learn how to control themselves. But look at the curiosity your child has. Everything they want to learn about. And they learn by touch. They learn by opening. They learn by seeing. You're not fooling them. You're showing them that even a chisaron, meaning the child touches everything when they're not supposed to, is a mila. The child is genuinely curious, okay? That's one way of reframing. You know, I heard an example from Dr. Blumenthal, who's speaking, you know, upstairs about another reframe in terms of a therapeutic moment. And again, you have to figure this out at home, but it's the idea of twisting something around, and it's not so hard to do. It really is not. A teen who was, I guess, a little more than at risk. He would sort of gone beyond that boundary. He was having a horrible time with his own parents and actually at some point hit his mother, okay, and did not show up for the next session with Dr. Blumenthal. And the parents were furious that the kid wouldn't come in. And Dr. Blumenthal said, what are you talking about? I think it's a great sign. He's so embarrassed by what he did that he can't even bear to face me at this point. And that was probably the truth. So it's a reframe, meaning you can look at your child's behavior in one way or you can turn it around and look at it another way. This takes practice. But it's a wonderful technique in terms of understanding your children, looking at them in a more positive light, and being able to give them more positive feedback. Humor. I can tell you, how important humor is in terms of maintaining your own perspective, and if we're not destroying your child's self-esteem, which we're now working so hard to build up. When your child is in a rotten mood, okay, and everything is going wrong, you can make jokes with them. Again, not at their expense, okay, but you can make a joke. You find a way to just turn the whole thing around on its head. Use humor. Use humor in abundance. And I had parents say to me, what if I don't feel funny? Fake it. You know? Because I've had parents tell me that if they're able to, the kid is starting to tantrum, okay? The kid is starting to really go off the wall in terms of they're getting angry and they're about to get aggressive. If the mother or parent, I'm using mother, I apologize to the fathers, if the mother or father, you know, is going to get in and say, again, you're going to go into the tantrum mode, I'm going to show you, I'm going to stop you, what's going to happen? The kid's going to escalate. And if the mother says, okay, tantrum time, 2.5 minutes on the clock, go ahead, go. Child's going to stop and say, huh? You know, as usually the child, if they're not really beyond the point already, will stop and laugh because they know it's ridiculous, you know. Or, my hair, I can't go to school looking this way. What did you do to my hair? And the mother said, I'll fix it if you don't worry. And she takes a brush, you know, and she creates two Pippi Longstocking pigtails, one thing out of the head. That's much better. You want to go to school? No, not making fun of them. You're using humor, okay? The child will laugh as a general rule. The more humor you can use, the more you can diffuse situations which will, in theory, punch the self-esteem that we're working so hard to build up down. Humor takes the punch out of these confrontations and doesn't damage anybody's self-esteem. As a matter of fact, it builds up your child's self-esteem, because if you can joke with them and laugh with them, then they must be basically okay. Because if they weren't okay, you wouldn't be able to do it. Not personalizing, okay? This is a really, really big one, and I've had parents tell me that being able to do this or not do this makes such a huge difference in how they react to their children and therefore in their children's self-esteem. Children, one of the children's roles in this world is to push your buttons. That is one of their God-given roles, okay? And it is their God-given right. If you understand that, and you understand that it has nothing to do with you as a parent, it's just part of what they do down here, then it'll be much easier to say, my child's out to get me. Why does he do this to me all the time? He's not doing anything to you. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. Okay? When your year-old child throws an incredible tantrum about who knows what, do you think your child's out to get you? Or do you think, well, maybe they're teething, maybe they're hungry, maybe their diaper's wet, maybe they need to sleep. You don't personalize it. Why do we personalize it when our 8-year-old says, you're the stupidest parent in the world? Well, they're angry about something. You know, maybe you did mess up. Don't personalize it. If you don't personalize it, then you take a step back and you think, okay, what has to happen now that will help my child's self-esteem and sort of salvage the situation in some way, you know? Or as a child, you know, therapists are all crazy. You guys don't have a parent, you know? For those of therapists in the room, I'm sure you've heard that many times. You know, I should take it personally? You know, there are times I know how to parent, times I don't know how to parent. I should feel personally, because he's found my Achilles heel, or she's found my Achilles heel. You're going to go out in that shaitel? You know, I can't believe you're going to go dress like that. What are my classmates going to say? It's like you're all also, you know. It's not about you. This is about their sensitivity in terms of their own insecurities, you know. And you can say to them, you know, I did my time being insecure. I'm past that stage. And don't worry, your classmates' mothers don't look any better than me. So we all look silly according to you guys. It's okay. So you can validate the fact that they're concerned, but it's not about you. Okay? If it's, you know, Friday night at the table, things have gone haywire and berserk for a change. The kids are all fighting and they're throwing food at each other and, you know, and you think, why can't I have a normal Shabbos table? What are the kids doing this to me for? They're doing anything to you. I mean, you happen to be there. You happen to be a parent. It's not about you. It's about them. Your reaction is so different. There are times when my child will do something which is so out of whack that I have to stop myself from laughing. Now, again, I have a bizarre sense of humor, granted, okay? And other parents, sometimes my spouse even, will say, well, be ready to, like, how could they do that? I said, what are you guys so upset about? You know, so they did it. This is what they're here for, you know? This is what they're here for. It's not about you. Children need to push you away. They need to push you away and need to know that regardless how far they push, you're still there. That's part of the self-esteem test. They're going to push you and they're going to find your buttons and they're going to tell you what lousy parents you are and that you dress funny and they're embarrassed to be seen with you. And you know, I have Brockstrom, I have a bunch of nieces and nephews in California who are Brockstrom, very intelligent, sometimes precocious and rambunctious. And so my oldest niece had a take on the usual, I'm not really part of this family, I must have been adopted. Okay, which we all hear at some point. What she said was, You can't be my real mother. My real mother would never treat me this way. Okay? So there's almost new takes on this stuff. My sister-in-law, Baruch Hashem, is a wonderful parent, And you can't laugh in your child's face, but, you know, you don't take it personally. What's take personally, you know? You want a new set of parents? You know, it's like taking the child who threatens to, and I've told parents to do this, not with a teenager, by the way, with a younger child, I'm running away from home. I can't take it anymore. Usually the 7, 8, 9 year old age. And, so what you do is, you say to them, come, I'm gonna help you pack. You know, here's a quarter, call me when you get there, please. You know, don't forget to take a long snack. And the children's like, this didn't work real well, you know? Didn't quite get the reaction that I wanted. The more you can use humor and understand that it's not you, the more their self-esteem will remain intact. Not just intact. The more moments of humor you can share, and the more you show them that you're an oak tree. You don't move. You have your moods, okay? You have your times, and you lose it because you're a parent and you're a human being, and you're going to lose it. But basically, you're an oak tree, and they can push and push, but you're not going anywhere. You're there for them. Their self-esteem is going to stay strong because that's the best thing a child can have is a parent in their corner who believes in them, who's there for them, who's going to show them what's right and wrong, who's going to tell them, but not over and over again, who's going to laugh with them, who's going to sit and play silly games with them, who's going to make fun, not of them, but with them, of some of the things that are so silly that they get stuck on. It just, you know, it makes all the difference in the world. We have another 3 minutes, and I know we're going to begin to get people coming in, so we're just going to go for another few minutes. I said this before, but I'm going to say it again. Make sure your children know that you love them and how important they are to you. I don't care whether you can't stand them at the moment. And I've had parents say to me, what should I do? Right now I can't stand my daughter, or I can't stand my son. They're impossible. And listen, children can be impossible, you know. They can be absolutely impossible. But the fact is, the maternal instinct would kick in. If anything, God forbid, were to threaten that child, you would be there like a lion, okay, ready to kill whoever's out to hurt your child. Don't tell me you don't love them, okay? You may not like them at the moment, but that love is still there. And if you can't tell them you love them, because sometimes all you want to do is wring their necks, okay, you know, email them. I would say put a note on their pillow, but that's like old-fashioned already. I like the notes in the pillow much better than the email, I must tell you. You know, the little note in the briefcase to be found, or the note in the pillow that says, I know we're having a rough time, I just want you to know that I really love you. Or I know we're having a tough time getting along, one of the best things that ever happened in my life. You know what that means to a child? If any of you have ever had a parent who did it, you know what it means to a child. Especially if you're not getting along at the moment. Especially if there's a lot of tension. Don't forget to let them know how important they are to you. Because they forget. And you forget. And if everybody forgets, then we're in trouble. Remind them over and over and over and over again. And the child who doesn't want to be hugged and kissed, like, so don't force them. You know, so hug them from across the room. You know, or blow them a kiss. Oh, stop it. You know. Stop it. You think they didn't catch it? They didn't catch the message in what you were doing? They caught it. One more minute. The role of mood mastery. This is one of the things that Dr. Tafel talks about in his book, at the beginning of his book, the same book that I mentioned before. And it has to do with the role of positive thinking and being able to help your child know their moods. I think one of the most important roles we have as parents, I mean, I've said this numerous times, I still think one of the most important roles we have is helping build up our child and help them maintain positive self-esteem. But there's many, 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 many chapters and sections to that. One of them is getting to know your child well enough so that you know their malos and chesronos. Now, when they're little, you're going to help them manage their own moods. As they get a little bit older, one of your jobs is to help them know their malos and chesronos and help them manage their own moods. So at some point, you can say to your 9-year-old, after, again, it's not the first discussion you've had, it's a discussion which has been ongoing from the time they're 5, listen, we know that God gave you a lot of strength of character, and sometimes because of that, you get angry easily. It's not a criticism, it's just a fact. So let's talk about what are the things you can do when you feel yourself getting that angry. If that's done non-offensively, okay, and very matter-of-fact, after discussions about, listen, I've got a bad temper also, where do you think you got yours from? You know, you got it from me, you know, or I'm the lousiest speller in the world. Look, I managed to get through school anyway, so you're not a good speller. Okay, let's figure out how we're going to pass spelling, whatever it is. Just knowing what your child's moods are, understanding their temperament, and helping them work with it over and over and over and over again. They're waving, my fans are waving to me from the back. Actually, there was Mr. Buchweiss telling me to stop. So we're basically going to cut because I know that I have the keynotes here. I hope we covered some of this stuff. And for people who want handouts, okay, like I said, the OU will have copies of them. I ask you, please, please, take to heart. Self-esteem is the most important gift you can give your child. Work on it yourselves. Work on it with them. You will, God willing, see fruits of your labor. Hatzlacha.